Ready. It's time to laugh, to win, and to live the thrill of the action.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. What the hell's going on out here?
No idea what's going on, but I am excited.
Every pick, every play, every game-changing moment. This is You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
A happy Tuesday. Welcome to You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM here on the BetMGM Network. I am your host, PJ Glasser, for the first hour today from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Nick Costo's going to take over from 4 to 7. Week 1 of the NFL begins on Thursday. Cowboys and the Eagles kicking off the season in a couple of days, so Nick will talk plenty of NFL. He'll give you his AFC preview, NFC preview. He's going to have Mark Schlereth join him at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Nick's also going to get into the biggest stories that we had over the weekend in college football, and Andy Staples will join him at 4:40 p.m. Eastern Time. Staples, give him some of his college football thoughts. As always, you guys can listen to You Better You Bet today, presented by BetMGM on the BetMGM Network. Go download the BetMGM app. You can listen, watch the show, YouTube, Twitch, at the BetMGM Network. You can listen to us for free on the Odyssey app as well. Here in the first hour, we're going to talk a lot of college football, recap what we saw in week one, also look ahead to week two of the season, and an interesting slate. Oklahoma, Michigan, the marquee game of the weekend, but some interesting games. We're still trying to figure out these teams, and then maybe get into some NFL week one thoughts as well. But let's start. We got to start with probably the biggest story of college football of week one, and that was Alabama and Florida State. And the big upset, with Florida State taking down the Tide 31-17. Bama, a 2-touchdown favorite, closed about 13.5, 14 most shops. Florida State pulls off the outright upset. Now, after that game, a lot of people, and I mean everybody, had negative things to say about Bama. There's not one positive thing I've seen over the last 3 days about Alabama. Nobody who thinks they can save the season. Nobody who thinks they just had a bad day. Nobody who thinks DeBoer's still the right coach for Alabama. Everything I have seen has been bad. Everybody thinks the season's over. They think they're cooked. And if you watch that game against Florida State, it's easy to see why you would come to that assumption, right? They looked terrible. They got dominated really after that first drive the rest of the game. They got dominated on both sides of the ball, got dominated the line of scrimmage. They got out-coached. Bama knew what Florida State was going to do. They knew they were going to run the football. They knew they were going to use the quarterback, Thomas Castellanos. They knew Gus Malzahn was on the other side. They still couldn't stop it. And after running the ball so efficiently and effectively on the first drive, they went away from that. They couldn't get pressure on the quarterback. They couldn't force any turnovers. They had timely penalties. They looked really, really bad. So now as we sit here going into week two, everybody thinks Bama's done. Everybody thinks they should move on from DeBoer. They should get a new head coach. Everybody thinks that they're not going to win the SEC, certainly not going to win the national championship. After week one, everybody is ready to throw in the towel. And there is not anybody I have seen that still thinks maybe the Tide can salvage their season. I just want everybody to think about who the two teams were last year that played in the national championship game, Notre Dame and Ohio State. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois last year. Bet you forgot about that. Bet you forgot that Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois all the way back in week two. And when the Irish lost that game, nobody thought they would be playing in the national title game. After they had the big win against A&M, and then they lost to Northern Illinois, everybody thought it was same old Notre Dame, same old Marcus Freeman. This is what they do. They lose games that they have no business of losing. They big letdown spot, and it's the same old Irish. And Marcus Freeman had never been to a title game before. Marcus Freeman had never really won a massive game before that A&M game. And after that Northern Illinois game, people thought Notre Dame were cooked. Then Ohio State. What about when they lost to Michigan to end the year? Did anybody want to pick Ohio State to win the national title? Did Ohio State look like a team that was going to win the national title after losing to Michigan? Everybody was lining up to bet Tennessee in the following week in the college football playoff. Both of those teams had a bad week. They didn't show up. They didn't look good. Bama had a bad game on Saturday, and maybe that's just who they are. Maybe they go off to be 7-5, 8-4 this season. Their schedule's very difficult, and because they're Alabama, they're going to be everybody's Super Bowl every single week. But this is what Kellen DeBoer has been since he has been at Alabama. He has been a guy that has struggled as a 2-touchdown favorite when his teams are on the road or neutral site when they played Michigan in the bowl game last year. He's lost to Vandy. He's lost to Oklahoma, Florida State now. All those games, he was a 2-touchdown favorite or more. But the reason Bama hired Kellen DeBoer was because of his success against the other top coaches in college football and how great he has been in big games. He's 6-0 against Dan Lanning, Sark, and Kirby Smart combined. He's terrific in ranked matchups. He's great as an underdog. He's great when we have a tight point spread. He's great in all these things. The area where he's not great is when he goes up against a team that he should dominate when he's a 2-touchdown favorite. And I think what hurts DeBoer a lot is the fact that Saban was the master of those games. Alabama was the king of beating teams that they were supposed to beat. He obviously won a lot of SEC titles. He won a lot of national championships. He won a lot of games. But he always would win the games that he was supposed to win. And because we're not used to Bama losing these kind of games, it gets magnified. There are upsets every year. Again, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois last year. There wasn't as much uproar for that because we had seen it before recently. When Ohio State lost to Michigan, massive rivalry game, but Michigan has beaten Ohio State the 3 years prior, so it wasn't crazy. But because we all had these expectations of Bama going into the season, we're used to them dominating in games like that. We thought year two of DeBoer, upgraded defense, Ty Simpson, Ryan Williams, his offense is going to put up points. And because they looked the way that they did, no effort, looked uninspired, weren't running around making plays, everybody's ready to get done with Alabama. But as the season goes on, because there is a lot of season left, I think we got to pump the brakes on Kellen DeBoer. And everybody calling for him to get fired. Everybody calling for Bama to hire a new coach. Because they didn't bring him in for games like Florida State, even though those are games they should win. They still have their entire SEC schedule ahead of them. They still haven't played an SEC game yet. So what I did was I bet them plus 650 to win the SEC. They were plus 450 before the season started. And now they're plus 650 and they haven't even played an SEC game yet. This week, they get Louisiana Monroe, and they're going to be a massive favorite in that game. They're going to be a 37.5-point favorite. They're going to win. Then they get Wisconsin the week after that. They're also going to win that game. Then they get a bye, and then they get Georgia. Georgia is going to be the game where you make your assessment about Kellen DeBoer because the season will be on the line for Bama. They have to win that game. If you lose that game and you're 2-2 with the rest of your SEC schedule, you're not making the playoff. They still have to play at Auburn, at South Carolina, home Tennessee, home LSU, home Oklahoma. Like, there are just too many tough games. They're not going to run the table, and they're not going to the playoff. They have to win that Georgia game. And Kellen DeBoer, in those kind of games, has been really, really good. So for all these people that want to rush to judgments and think that Bama's cooked and think that they're going to be 7-5 this year, I would hold off until we see what they look like in the Georgia game. Because again, that'll be the first game in SEC play. If they win that game, that'll be a massive tiebreaker for them against one of the top teams in the SEC. And think about it from this standpoint too. I think when a lot of people was looking at Bama's schedule this season, and you were going through, you're playing the game of that game's a win, that game's a win, that game's a loss, a lot of people looked at the game, Bama at Georgia, thinking that's probably going to be a loss. Bama's probably going to be about a 6.5-point underdog in that game. Well, what happens if Bama wins that game? And what happens if they're 3-1 and their record is the same as essentially we thought it would be going into the season? And instead of beating Florida State and losing to Georgia, they lose to Florida State and beat Georgia. And wouldn't you argue that you would much rather have the Georgia win because it's an SEC win? And again, it's a massive tiebreaker for a team you're likely competing with to win an SEC championship game. I understand a lot of people are not going to like Alabama in that game against Georgia because of how they looked against Florida State. I'm willing to give DeBoer a chance, though, because his track record has been that he has struggled in spots like the Florida State game when he's a big favorite on the road, but his track record has also been that his teams have been awesome in those games like Georgia. And we're going to get a desperate Alabama team. We're going to get an Alabama team whose season is on the line. And if we see the same effort in that Florida State game that we do in that Georgia game, then I think it's time. It's time to get rid of DeBoer, because that will tell me all I need to know. If your team can't get up for Georgia, if you're not competitive, if it doesn't look like they're playing hard, then he's not the guy. Then you got to move on. You got to figure out the $70 million buyout, and you really have to consider getting a new coach. But I'm willing to give him to the Georgia game, because that's the season for Alabama. And again, if they win, they're 3-1, like a lot of people thought they would be, and they still got the whole season ahead of them. And then you look at the rest of their schedule, and you're like, okay, even if they beat Georgia, they still got a ridiculous schedule the rest of the way. And it's true, LSU looked really good. South Carolina might have the best quarterback in college football. Auburn does a lot of the same stuff on offense that Florida State just did. It's probably going to give Bama issue. All that is absolutely fair. But again, DeBoer is great in those kinds of games when it's supposed to be close, when he's an underdog. He plays to the level of his competition. That's what his teams do. And I think it's really hard for Alabama fans and people who've just watched college football, because we're not used to this with Bama. But this is the new reality. This is what it is. There's no more Saban. They're going to lose games that you don't expect them to lose. They're going to look uninspired in spots where you expect them to be ready to go. But that Georgia game for me, that's going to be the litmus test for Kellen DeBoer, and it's why I bet Bama to win the SEC at plus 650, because going into that Georgia game at the beginning of the season, you would obviously think both teams would be fired up. Both teams would be ready to go. It's one of the biggest games on the college football slate. When you see Alabama-Georgia, you automatically think that's the top three game in college football that year, and it's going to be. But now we get a desperate Bama team who needs that game and who is going to be playing for their lives. And because of that, I see some good value on them to win the SEC. Could you imagine if they win that game? Do you know what their price is going to drop to for them to win the SEC with a win like that over Georgia? What that tiebreaker would do? Georgia still has to play Texas. One of those teams are going to end up losing. Bama gets LSU at home. That's going to be a massive game for a tiebreaker. Auburn's looking really good. Bama gets them, obviously, in the Iron Bowl. So they beat Georgia. They could be in a good spot. But I mean, after that game took place, and over the last couple days, and as the dust settled, and I've listened to everybody talk about that game, there has not been one positive thing about Alabama. And just think about the two teams again that played in the national title game last year. Think about Notre Dame and think about Ohio State. Think about both of those teams. Think about the losses that they suffered and how they overcame those. And at the time, we didn't think either of those teams would do what they did. We didn't think Notre Dame would go to the title after they lost to Northern Illinois. We didn't think Ohio State would win the national title after they lost to Michigan. But both of those teams did that. And Ryan Day had never been, he had never won a national title before, right? He had been to a national title, but we really didn't think of Ryan Day as a guy that would win a national title at Ohio State. Marcus Freeman, we didn't think of that he was a guy. We didn't think of him as a top three coach before they went on that run in the playoff. DeBoer went to a national championship 2 years ago. People are calling for his head. They think he's a terrible coach. They think Bama needs to move on. Why don't we wait to see what this guy does in SEC play? Why don't we wait to see what his team looks like against Georgia and the rest of their SEC slate? So I understand it might be a tough bet for a lot of people because we're all prisoner of the moment. And maybe I'm underreacting. Maybe that performance was so bad and that's what we're going to see for the rest of the year, and that's just who Bama is. And then obviously I'm going to lose my bet and DeBoer might be fired. There's a good chance that could happen. But I just think about, again, the opportunity that Bama has and the fact that their first SEC game is Georgia and how much that game is going to mean to them. Anybody who bets football, you guys know, whether it's NFL or college football, you're always looking for games and you're always looking for teams that are desperate. You're always looking for that because throughout the season, throughout the grind of battling every single week and preparing for a new opponent, teams are going to have letdown spots. There are going to be certain games where you're not getting up for those games that you might get up for some others. Oh, Bama's going to be up for that game. Their season's on the line. And I got to tell you guys, the last two times Bama has played Georgia, and I understand Saban was the coach, but the last two times Bama has played Georgia where their season has been on the line, looked pretty good in those games. Remember when Jalen Milroe and Bama overtook undefeated Florida State? They had to beat an undefeated Georgia in the SEC championship. They did that. Bryce Young and Bama with John Mechie, Jameson Williams, had to beat Georgia to get into the playoff in the SEC title game. They did that. And oh, by the way, if there's one team in college football that Kirby Smart struggles with, who would that be? Alabama. So just keep the faith. Maybe there's still time for the Tide. Plus 650 for them to win the SEC. Pump the brakes on Kellen DeBoer. Let's see what he does on September 27th when the Tide take on Georgia. And then we can make our decisions, our comments, what we think about the Alabama head coach. More college football reaction in week one. We come back.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary. Let's get back to You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network.
All right, let's continue talking week one of college football, reacting to what we saw over the weekend. PJ Glasser here with you. You Better You Bet presented by BetMGM. I'm with you guys here for hour number one. Nick Costo's going to take over at the top of the hour. Let's talk about the top 10 matchups that we had over the weekend, including Texas and Ohio State. We got things going on Saturday at noon Eastern time. Ohio State, 14-7 win over Texas. Arch Manning did not look great. 170 passing yards, one touchdown. And with all the expectation that Arch had coming in, There were a lot of things that he certainly needs to work on, but I thought in that second half, fourth quarter especially, you started to see some flashes and you started to see him look really good. When it comes to Arch, I've talked about this numerous times on the network. I thought Arch was maybe the fourth or fifth best quarterback in the SEC, and after watching Nussmeier play and watching Sellers play and watching Lagway play, I mean, that was confirmed. All these people that were talking about Arch being a generational quarterback, the best that we've seen since Burrow or Tebow or Cam Newton. I mean, crazy, crazy. Guy was making his first road start in college football. He was going up against the number three team in the country with the best defensive player, one of the best defenses, in a hostile environment in front of 90,000 people. And Ohio State had a great defensive game plan. But how many of the big games did we watch this weekend? And those, in a lot of those big games, they were low scoring first halves, right? A lot of these big games, I mean, we had Julian Sain, we had Arch Manning, we had Ty Simpson, we had CJ Carr. Bunch of these quarterbacks make their first starts on the road, hostile environment, make their first starts in general. And a lot of these coaches were very conservative. They were low scoring games, didn't really empty the playbook, didn't really have many shot plays, all that. Texas with Sark, again, very conservative. And I think Texas has a big Sark problem. We're talking so much about Arch and how he looked in his debut that I think we're missing two big things with Texas. First off, the defense looked awesome. Texas has a national championship defense. They got superstars at all three levels. But once again, that unit is going to be really, really good. And when we think Texas, we think Sark, and we think quarterback and offense and then putting up a million points. But his defense the last couple years have been really, really good. And this defense, again, this year is going to be terrific. So that's point number one. Point number two, man. I mean, Sark, like, eventually, when is he going to take some heat for some of these performances? I know he's taken a little bit, but Arch took the brunt of it for the most part in that Ohio State game. You think back to Texas last season, when, again, they had a team that was good enough to win the national championship. When they played in games where the team was as talented as them, or the team was, it was a, you know, it was a big game, top matchup, whatever it was, Sark's offense, more often than not, was a no-show. Week two against Michigan was their best performance. On the road in Ann Arbor, they dropped 31 points. But again, Michigan really didn't have much of an offense, so Texas's defense was putting them in great situations. They were taking advantage. But nonetheless, Texas 31 points against Michigan. How about both matchups against Georgia? 15 points for Sark and Texas at home. And then in the SEC championship game in overtime, only 19 points for Texas in that game. Texas A&M, the regular season finale, when the winner of that game was going to Atlanta for the SEC title game, they scored 17 points against A&M. And then in the college football playoff, way more talented than Arizona State, but certainly Ohio State, team that won the national title, tons of talent, only 14 points in that game against Ohio State as well. So 14 against the Buckeyes, 19 and 15, the two games against Georgia, 17 against A&M, and the 31 against Michigan. And now here we go again against Ohio State, and Sark's team only puts up 7 points. So Arch has to play better, and I think he will. I think he's going to improve as the season goes on. He's going to look better and better. Texas has a Sark issue, man. And I mean, when you're as good of a coach as he is, when you're getting as paid as much as he is, when you're one of the top offensive minds in college football, your offense can't be no-shows in all these games. And more often than not, they are. So that's my big concern with Texas. It's not really Arch. I think he's going to be fine, and I love the defense. But Sark's play calling in these big games, he's just got to let it rip, man. He's got to go for it. Feels like he's playing scared. He's calling games conservative. A lot like Ryan Day last year with Ohio State in the regular season. You watch the Buckeyes play, looks like they were terrified. You have Jeremiah Smith, the Mecca Abukum. Throw the ball, man. Let it go. They did in the college football playoff, and they busted Tennessee. They smacked Oregon. They were winning all these games against top teams. So that's what Texas has to do. Sark's just got to let it go. And when he does, I think Texas will start to win some of these big games more and more, and they'll start to put up some more points. But until then, that is probably my biggest concern right now with Texas. One of the other top 10 matchups we had on Saturday, LSU and Clemson. A lot of people's takeaways will be that LSU is a national title contender. I think that's a fair take. A lot of people will take away the fact that LSU has a defense this season. I think that's a fair take. They looked really good. Nussmeier's terrific. They don't have a stud superstar receiver this year, but they have a very good collection of wide receivers, and they have a good running back, too, in Caden Durham. And that offensive line, they had four new guys start in that game against Clemson. I mean, that's a tough task in game one, and there were some moments where they were overwhelmed, but all in all, thought they played well, and throughout the season, they should get better and better. But for me, the big takeaway, again, with Clemson is Cade Klubnik. I told you guys before the season started, Klubnik's overrated. He's not that guy. People picking Clemson to win the national title, they're not going to because of the quarterback. Dabo Swinney, the two titles that he's won, he's had Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence as his quarterbacks. When Dabo wins a title, yeah, he has great rosters. He has great defenses, good skill position players. He's got the best quarterback in college football when he wins national championships. He does not have that in Cade Klubnik. Everybody fell in love with what they saw against Texas in the college football playoff last year, that they forgot what Cade Klubnik has been most of his career. How about this stat for you? Outside of that Texas college football playoff game, the last four games that Cade Klubnik has played against SEC teams, 0 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in those games. Is that good? Does that sound like a guy that's going to win a national championship? Does that sound like a team you want to bet on with that quarterback? Defense is great. Head coach has won titles. I like their O-line. Wide receivers are pretty good. But Cade Klubnik, maybe he can play good against, maybe he can play one game good against the team. Ask him to do that twice in the playoff, 3 times. I'm good. I know that was a big talking point after week one, right? We were looking for these teams who would lose, their prices would get worse, and maybe we buy the dip. And I think people are doing that with Clemson because you look at the fact they play in the ACC, they have an easy schedule, they're going to be in the playoff. And then, you know, once they get in the playoff, their team's going to be good. You're getting a better price on them. With that quarterback, though, I wouldn't do it. A lot of people like Cade Klubnik. I just don't get it. He was great against Texas last year. He absolutely was. Outside of that, though, he was not. So I'm good on Cade Klubnik, and I'm good on Clemson to really do anything of significance this season. The other top 10 matchup we had was Notre Dame and Miami. This was a fun game. It's probably the game, certainly of the marquee games, this was the best one of the weekend. And my biggest takeaway was that even though Notre Dame lost, they got a quarterback. CJ Carr, he's good. He's good. he's good enough to win Notre Dame the national title. They got everything else. They got a great coach. They got a great defense. Offensive line's good. They got a terrific running back, probably the best in college football, who they only gave the ball 10 times to. I mean, what are you doing? Run the ball. Jeremiah felt like I was watching a Ravens game. Give the ball to your bet. Run the ball, Jeremiah Love. I mean, it was crazy. Mike Denbrock, look, everybody in the world was expecting Notre Dame to come out and just run, establish the run, try to take some pressure off of CJ Carr. And he's like, well, I know what everybody thinks I'm going to do, so I'm just going to throw 5 screen passes to start the game. And then I'm going to continue to throw the ball and see if maybe the defense relaxes. Miami's pass rush was awesome. Reuben Bain is a stud. Got to give Jeremiah Love the ball, man. I mean, my goodness. 10 carries, just unacceptable in a game like that. So you look at Notre Dame's schedule the rest of the way, home against A&M, home against Boise, which at the time maybe we thought would be a difficult game, but oof, don't know. Probably going to be an easy win. I think Notre Dame's going to win the rest of their games. So I think the fact that the Irish lost might have done us all a favor. Of all of the top 10 teams that lost, that maybe you can get like a dip on their national title price, the one that I would buy is absolutely Notre Dame at 14-1. That is the team that I would look at. Quarterback was the only question mark about that team going into the season that we had. Felt good about everything else, everything on that team except the QB. And Carr was good, man. And he's only going to get better and better as the season goes on. He can escape the pocket, make plays, extend. How about that touchdown when he like ran around and went to his left and threw it in the end zone? I mean, that was big time. And in that fourth quarter, when Notre Dame needed drives out of him, he delivered. So he's good. Notre Dame's going to be fine. I think they could be worth a bet at 14-1. Miami on the other side, extremely talented team. On their best day, Miami could beat anybody in college football. Truly believe that. Anybody. Miami's good enough to beat any team in the sport. But much like Cade Klubnik with Clemson as their quarterback, and I don't see them winning a title with that quarterback, I don't see Miami winning a national title with that head coach. I don't see it. Cristobal is a great recruiter, and he gets great talent. But my God, like all the jokes that we make about Mario, you just watch, it's like, I mean, the poor guy just can't help himself. You're playing for a 47-yard field goal? I mean, Carson Beck's having a great game. You see in the field, he's not turning the ball over. Malachi Toney is getting open every other play, and you're just running 3 straight times up the middle to set up for a 48-yarder. Now, to the kid's credit, he absolutely drilled it, but I mean, Mario, just that's a coach that you would want to back to win a national title? Like, there's no way. I might have been wrong on how good potentially Miami could be this season. I like their under 9.5 wins. I didn't think they would make the college football playoff. I still like Clemson to win the ACC. Miami and Clemson do not play each other this year in the regular season, so they could match up in the ACC title game. But I will say with Miami, their schedule is kind of sneaky, and they have some games that maybe on paper, on the surface, don't look all that difficult, but I think could cause some problems for them. And Cristobal teams always crumble down the stretch, and they always tend to slip up towards the end of the year. Miami has back-to-back road trips to end the regular season at Virginia Tech and at Pittsburgh. We all talk about all the time when Tua and the Dolphins go on the road, a team from Miami, when they go up to Buffalo or New York, or they play in a cold weather city in December, January, how they look. I mean, college team from Miami, I don't think they're going to necessarily play all that great in Blacksburg, Virginia, November 22nd, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, November 29th. So, again, like, games where they're going to be favored, you look at the team, they're going to win that, but just keep in mind, like, team from Miami going to some cold spots, they have to play SMU still, they get Florida State, so they do play some good teams. I think Miami is going to probably win 10 games and go to the playoff, but just keep in mind the end of the year that the Canes, as talented as they look, they might drop some games that we necessarily don't think they will. And then the other game, obviously, last night, North Carolina, TCU. Oof. Man, did Carolina look good in that first drive. 7-0 right down the field. Gio Lopez, beautiful dime. They were running the ball well. Look like, okay, UNC, maybe have something here. Where I was way wrong, and I think a lot of us were wrong, Belichick's defense. I think I saw a stat. He never gave up 48 points to the coach of the Patriots, and already in his first college game, gave up 48 points. We'll see. It's one game. I'm not going to overreact to a lot of other people are. We knew North Carolina against some of these top teams weren't going to have the talent, but you thought they would be well-coached, and you thought they would be in the right spots, and It was just a complete mismatch after that first drive. We'll see what their quarterback situation looks like because Gio Lopez got hurt in the second half. Max Johnson came in relief. Looked pretty good. So that might be their quarterback moving forward. But I thought for sure the one given with Carolina early in the season was that their defense would be pretty solid because of who was coaching him. And the market reflected that yesterday. That total was at 58.5 for like 2 weeks. I mean, 2 days, like 4 days ago, was at 58.5. Then it goes to 56.5. It got to as low as 53.5 last night. So that total dropped 5 points in about, you know, the span of like 5 days. People were hammering the under. Smart bettors, pro bettors were hammering the under. And North Carolina did their part, but they on offense. But defensively, they could not stop TCU. I think we also have to give TCU some credit. And I'm impressed with the Big 12, I have to say. Utah, I think, is the real deal. They were one of my big takeaways from week one. Devin Dampier, they got a quarterback, and he's very good. I would keep an eye out on the Utes this year. I picked Baylor preseason to win the Big 12. I think I might want to change that pick to Utah because I was impressed with Dampier. And Kyle Whittingham always has good defense. They can always run the football. I think Utah is going to be good. But TCU, man, Hoover's the real deal. He set the TCU school record last year for passing yards. He's a legit quarterback. He's an NFL quarterback. And I love their coaching staff. Kendall Briles, the OC. Andy Avalos, the former Boise head coach, is their defensive coordinator. Like, Sonny Dykes has a good coaching staff. They're one of the top recruiting schools in the Big 12. And they got a good quarterback, and they can put up some points. So, yes, North Carolina looked awful. Let's give TCU some credit, too. They looked really, really good. An impressive 48-14 victory for TCU last night. We come back, final segment here of the first hour, talk a little more college football, dive into NFL Week 1 as well. All right, let's look ahead to Week 2 in college football. PJ Glasser here with you. You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. I'm going to step aside after this. Nick Costos will take over top of the hour, 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. Andy Staples will join him at 4:40 to recap the college football weekend. Then Mark Schlereth will join Nick to talk some NFL at 5. Nick will also preview the AFC and the NFC, give out all of his thoughts there as we are counting down kickoff in the NFL starting on Thursday between the Cowboys and the Eagles. Let's dive into week two, though, of the college football season, because, I mean, this past week we had so many big-time games, three top 10 matchups, a lot of marquee schools going against each other. This week we get Oklahoma and Michigan, which is the main event, but we get some interesting games that maybe not won't draw as much attention, but especially from a gambling perspective, a lot of tight spreads that are interesting. Number 12, Illinois, is on the road taking on Duke this week, noon Eastern time. Three noon Eastern games this week that are all very fascinating. Illinois-Duke is the first one. Now, Illinois was one of these teams that a lot of people were bullish on in the offseason, being kind of like a dark horse team in college football this year. And this is one of those trappy games that could be very, very tricky for the Illini. You have Brett Bielema going up against Manny Diaz, and I think that's an advantage for Illinois in this game. Luke Altmyer, the quarterback for Illinois, has done a great job since becoming the QB there. Duke went out, got themselves a new quarterback that they feel good about. Their defense is always good under Manny Diaz. I think I'm going to end up staying away from this game. Betting Duke live, I think, is the way I want to bet this game. Maybe even betting Illinois live if we get that opportunity as well. But I'm hoping that we get maybe like a 7.5 with one of these teams. Certainly a 10.5 would be amazing. But I think this game is going to be tightly played. I think it's going to be close. We're going to see some turnovers. Could be ugly and sloppy at times. If I had to make a play, probably would lean just Illinois money line, to be honest with you. But That's a game I'm probably going to stay away from. SMU-Baylor is an interesting game as well. You've unranked Baylor at 16th-ranked SMU, and SMU is a 2.5-point favorite with a total of 65.5. I think the big takeaway from that Auburn-Baylor game that we saw on Friday night was Auburn's ability to run the football on Baylor, especially with the quarterback, Jackson Arnold. Well, SMU's got a mobile quarterback as well in Kevin Jennings, so I think they're going to be able to do a lot of those same things. Total's pretty high as well. It's 65.5, and we saw a bunch of unders in week one. And in a lot of these big games, we saw a lot of low-scoring games, right? Texas and Ohio State, 14-7. LSU Clemson, 17-10. Some low-scoring games. I think this one could be a shootout. I'd lean over in this game. I also lean SMU -2.5. I worry about Baylor's inability to stop the run. And then the other noon Eastern game that I'm really looking forward to is Iowa and Iowa State, Cy-Hawk, between the Cyclones and the Hawkeyes. Iowa State has lost 6 straight at home to Iowa. Kirk Ferentz has dominated this series, and he's dominated Matt Campbell. This is a numbers play for me. You're going to give me 3 with the Hawkeyes who have had Iowa State's number. I'm going to take them, so give me Iowa +3 on the road against Iowa State. Looking at some of the other games that we have on the schedule this week, number 21, Ole Miss is on the road taking on Kentucky. I like the under in that game, 52.5. I also would probably be on Kentucky +10 as well. Coming into the year, I thought Kentucky was going to have the worst offense in the SEC, and they looked every bit of that against Toledo. Their quarterback, Zach Calzada, had 85 passing yards against Toledo at home. 85 passing yards against Toledo. So what do you think he's going to do against Ole Miss? On the flip side, Austin Simmons, who I'm a big fan of, I think is going to be awesome this year. This is his first road start in college football against an SEC team with a pretty good defense. I mean, how many times did we see in week one all these quarterbacks go on the road for the first time and struggle? So I think that game is under 52.5. And when those two teams tend to play, they tend to be close. So I would look at Kentucky +10. Against Ole Miss as well. Kansas and Mizzou. Missouri's a 6.5-point favorite against Kansas with a total of 50.5. I would look at a Kansas team total under probably in this game. Missouri's defense is one of the best in the SEC. They returned 9 starters from last year's defense. That was really, really good. I think Kansas is going to have a tough time moving the ball in that game. So Kansas team total under, probably a way I would bet that one against Missouri. Then the game at 4:15. Which I think is going to pique the interest of a lot of people. South Florida takes on the Florida Gators, which should be a fun game. And Florida's laying 17.5 in that matchup with a total of 54.5. Everybody watched South Florida dominate Boise State, dominate them. And now you're getting 17.5 points against the Gators. I think South Florida's a trap this week. I think that game was more about Boise and just their inability to find any kind of rhythm or offense without Ashton Gentry. South Florida, they played a difficult non-conference schedule the last couple of years. They played very well against Bama. They struggled last year against Miami without much of a defense. Now they take on Florida, who's maybe a top 10 team talent-wise from a talent standpoint with a terrific quarterback in DJ Lagway. Keep in mind, too, Alex Golish, the head coach for South Florida, from the Josh Heupel coaching tree from Tennessee, and Florida plays Tennessee every year. So the Gators are used to the kind of offense that South Florida is going to run. I think their speed, athleticism, going to be too much. And I think watching Boise's offense struggle, South Florida going on the road to the Swamp, I think they're going to have a tough time keeping up with the Gators. So I like Florida 17.5 in that game. Can I interest anybody in Missouri State and Marshall? Sicko game, and I absolutely love it. Give me Missouri State +10 against Marshall. I laid the 35.5 with USC last week against Missouri State, so I actually watched a bunch of that game, and I watched a lot of Missouri State. First year of them in the FBS. And I got to tell you guys, I was impressed with Missouri State, especially on offense. They were making some plays defensively. Just, I mean, not enough speed, talent to hang with Lincoln Riley and his offensive concepts and everything USC wants to do on the offensive side of the ball. But when they were on offense, I mean, their quarterback can make some plays. They got a good running back. They had some wide receivers that were making some catches as well. So Marshall, 60 new players that they had coming in this offseason after getting a new head coach, and they just played Georgia last week. I love fading these group of 5 teams that are coming off playing a physical, tough SEC team with a bunch of NFL players. They're probably a little beat up. They're laying 10 at home. I like Missouri State in that game, so we'll take them at +10. Couple of other games that I like. Arizona State is on the road this week, taking on Mississippi State in Starkville. Good luck dealing with the cowbell. If you're not used to it, could throw you off a little bit. It's also a long flight from Tempe going to Starkville. I would like a 7 with Mississippi State in that game. If you can grab it, I would look at the Bulldogs plus the points against ASU. Then the marquee matchup, Oklahoma and Michigan. Sooners laying 5.5. total in the game is 46.5. I like Oklahoma on the money line. I think they are a great money line parlay piece this week. So whether that be another game on the college board, maybe you want to parlay them with the Eagles on Thursday or the Broncos on Sunday, whatever it may be, I think Oklahoma is a great money line parlay piece. I'd probably lay the 5.5 with them if I had to this week. The only thing that worries me is that this line in the summer was about 2.5, 3, and now it's up to 5.5, 6. And I don't really understand why there's a 3-point jump. Like, neither team really looked all that great in week one. I kind of think this is what the line should have been to begin with. But now the fact that it's jumped up 3 points, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. The fact that it was 3 in the summer. So just taking Oklahoma on the money line, and I'd look to parlay them with another game on the board. And then finally, another game that's interesting to me, Vanderbilt and Virginia Tech. Because Vanderbilt upset the Hokies last year in week one in Nashville. Virginia Tech was a ranked team. A lot of people thought they could be a sleeper in the ACC. Virginia Tech's defense is good this year. I think they're going to be able to run the ball on Vandy. They had some success doing that against South Carolina. And Virginia Tech's receivers made some really good catches in that game. South Carolina played some good man-to-man coverage. Vandy's going to try and do the same thing. And I think Virginia Tech is going to have some more success at home, at night, in Blacksburg. I'll take Virginia Tech on the money line, minus 115 against Vanderbilt. So those are a couple games I have my eye on in week two of college football. What about week one in the NFL? This Eagles game just keeps going up and up. It's now 8.5 Philly favored against Dallas, which makes sense because the teasers are just, I mean, people are hammering Philly -2, -2.5, I'm sure, on the teasers. I'm in no rush to bet Dallas. Maybe we even get a 9 with the Cowboys. I don't think I'm going to end up betting this game. It would probably be Dallas or pass for me. I don't know how they're going to get stops without Micah Parsons against Philly and that rushing attack, but it's a divisional game. Dak's usually good playing against NFC East teams. I think Dallas is going to be able to put up some points. And 8.5, that's a lot in the NFL. Even though Philly's the much more talented team and they're at home, I would probably look Dallas. But maybe we get a 9. Maybe these teasers just drive it all the way up to 9 because it's gone from 8 to 8.5 in the last hour. So maybe this thing just keeps going up and up. Love the Saints week one against the Cardinals, +6.5. Kyler Murray is a 6.5-point favorite on the road. I'm more than good with that. This game reminds me so much of Patriots-Bengals from last year. Everybody thought New England was going to be the worst team in football last year. Everyone thought they would be the worst. Well, they ended up being the fourth worst team in football, but they did win in week one against the Bengals. Everybody thinks the Saints are going to be the worst team in football this year. Everybody is picking the Saints. Superdome in week one, going to be a lot different than the Superdome in week 14 this year. Still one of the best environments in the NFL. I like the fact that Rattler is starting over Shuck. I like the Saints plus the points. I like them on the money line, too. I think they're worth a stab, and they can win that game against Arizona. I love the Raiders in week one against the Patriots. I mean, this is easy for me. The Raiders are my favorite win total over this year. The Patriots are my favorite win total under this year. They go up against one another week one. Pete Carroll's terrific as an underdog. I think Geno Smith's going to play well. Raiders get out of there with the big win. So give me the Raiders money line, +115 against the Patriots. Colts and Dolphins is now a pick 'em at -110. We've seen some money come in on Miami so far earlier today. I like Indy, though, man. All the emotion that's going to be in that building honoring Jim Irsay in their first game since his passing. Daniel Jones is terrible. I get it. But he's going up against arguably the worst secondary in the NFL, so I think he's going to be able to make some plays. Jonathan Taylor running the ball on the ground a little bit, giving them some balance. I like the Colts at home, -110. And then also, give me the Packers at home, -2.5 against the Lions. I like the Packers to begin with. It's moved up a point because of the Micah Parsons trade. A lot of new for Detroit. Losing coordinators, coaches, center Frank Ragnow, Jared Goff outdoors, on the road. I think the Packers take care of business. Anything under a field goal, I think, is a good bet with Green Bay, -2.5. That'll do it for me. Nick Costos coming up next, 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern time. Enjoy the rest of You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM.